You're listening to the Speaking Tongues podcast. I'm your host, El Charisse. Each week, I sit down to a conversation with multilinguals where we discuss and celebrate language, life, and culture through our own perspectives. Episode 62, Speaking Caribbean Spanish. Hello, language lovers. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Speaking Tongues, the podcast in conversation with multilinguals. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Tamara, the founder of Spanish Con Salsa and the host of the Learn Spanish Con Salsa podcast. And this week, we're discussing her language of Caribbean Spanish. If you're listening to the show, then you surely know that Spanish is one of the most widely spoken languages in the world, with over 500 million speakers. Spanish also has many regional dialects, the Caribbean dialect being one of them. Beyond Puerto Rico, Cuba, and the Dominican Republic, this region also includes the Caribbean coasts of Colombia, Venezuela, Mexico, Panama, and others. In this episode, Tamara tells us how she first came to the Spanish language through fitness and music, and then furthered her abilities in Spanish through traveling to places in the Caribbean region. We talk about music and lyrics in salsa and bachata songs, and we take a quick detour into talking about some of her favorite musicians in these genres. Tamara talks to us about how she was able to learn the Spanish language on her own, largely without needing to rely on structured courses and classes, which in my opinion is incredibly admirable. We talk about indigenous and African words and language usage in the Spanish spoken in the Caribbean, accents throughout the region, including how the pronunciation differs from country to country, and we discuss the importance of understanding Caribbean culture beyond the resorts, the sun, sand, and sea. Big thanks to Tamara for this thoughtful conversation and for sharing your journey with us. If you enjoy this episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the Speaking Tongues podcast on Apple Podcasts, or like and subscribe to my YouTube channel so that other language lovers like ourselves can find the show. And if you've been a longtime listener of the show, or even a recent listener, you can now support the show on buymeacoffee.com. Links to all platforms are in the show notes. Wepa, let's chat. Welcome back to another episode of Speaking Tongues. I am here today with Tamara. How are you today, Tamara?
I am great. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
I'm great. And I'm so excited that you had an opportunity to join me for this conversation. And I'm so excited to learn so much about your languages and your business and your podcast and all that good stuff. So I like to start each episode with the same question, and that is, what is your first language and which languages have you learned to speak?
Okay, so my first language is English. I was born in the US from the East Coast, so that is my first language. I know some people like to say that, you know, AAVE is their second language, but I don't really go there. There is some code switching that happens. I learned, like, with my first job that, like, oh, this is, like, you guys speak a different English. But English is my first language. I learned Spanish. I was first exposed to it in school, but as an adult, I really put more effort into learning it, learning to speak it anyway. So English and Spanish. I've dabbled in Portuguese. I still think I'm fairly a beginner in Portuguese, although because I speak Spanish, it's a lot easier for me to understand. And I speak a little Portuguese, but I haven't done a lot with it lately. And the last one is Arabic, but I'm a super beginner. I took 2 semesters of Arabic in college, and we really didn't get past the alphabet, quite honestly. And I started picking it up because pre-pandemic, I had planned to go to Egypt, which did not happen. Oh. But I am still... I have this desire, it's on my back burner, to learn Egyptian Arabic, specifically that dialect. Mm-hmm. So basically Spanish and English, but also aspiring to speak better Portuguese and Arabic.
That's exciting. I think that's exciting.
Yeah. And Brazilian Portuguese too, so to be
clear. Yeah, and that's kind of cool because I think, you know, I'm not a linguist, but they're, you know, at least Arabic has a connection to Spanish as well. Like, did you notice any of those connections? Like, I guess, you know, throughout your Spanish studies and whether, you know, you're in college or now just picking up Arabic again?
Yeah, so definitely. I mean, so my initial exposure to Arabic was actually more of a religious exposure. So I know, like, a lot of the prayers in Arabic, But I didn't know at that time that there was this like classical Arabic, right? Which is like the language of the Quran. And then there's spoken Arabic, which the dialects of Arabic are so different, like Egyptian Arabic versus Gulf Arabic versus Moroccan Arabic, which is like might as well be, you know, French Arabic. It's like a whole different language. That the spoken dialects are so, so different. And my professor for Arabic in college was Lebanese. So I didn't really pick up on the fact that learning modern standard Arabic wasn't very useful in terms of traveling and having conversations with humans. But yes, I think because of my knowledge of history, knowing that the Moors, you know, was African sort of dynasty that migrated throughout Northern Africa and actually had conquered Spain for a time, that whole, not only through trade, through the history of those cultures being so close together, kind of mixing together, that yes, there's a lot of influence. So there are several words that you'll find that are in both languages. So I think that sort of that history of the African Muslims who conquered that part of Europe for some time has a lot to do with it, as well as the trade routes between those areas.
Yeah. It's so interesting. Like that whole region to me. Yeah. That whole region to me is really fascinating because there's so much culture, and I don't know if saying mixed up is too reductive of a description, but I think it's just like, I wish we learned that in elementary school. And like, I didn't learn that until I was much older.
All of those things I learned on my own. I mean, like I took Arabic in college just because I went to Howard University my first year of college and it was offered there. And at the time I was a practicing Muslim and I thought, oh, it'd be really cool to know some Arabic. And I didn't really learn most of what I know about history and culture from school. I mean, it was mainly through my own study, learning about African history, learning about the history of the region, learning about the history of Islam, that I learned those things.
What languages did you hear when you were growing up?
Yeah, growing up, English. I mean, I didn't really have much diversity in terms of language, unless you want to count my family being from the South. So like we learned a very specific English, you know, kind of being able to switch between that and like sort of what I learned in school. But yeah, primarily in the house, it was just English growing up, and in my community as well.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, that's changed a lot now. Like I think, you know, my surrounding sort of community has become a lot diverse. But when I was growing up, it was very black and white. It was all English. I wasn't really exposed to any other languages really when I was growing up.
So when you were in school, and I guess going back to maybe your first, you know, second language lessons that you had, whether it was junior high school, what languages were you offered when you were in school, and which ones were you interested in?
So when I was coming up, they didn't teach language until middle school, right? So it wasn't until seventh grade where I was offered the option of either Spanish or French. And everyone said, I think I picked Spanish for two reasons. One, you know, I think at the time, kind of like how people view Mandarin now, at the time it was like, well, you know, Spanish will be more useful, right, from a practical standpoint, because there's more people that speak it that are closer, and it's also easier than French, supposedly, right? That's what people would say.
Of course.
Oh, well, but French has all these weird, you know, letters, and it sounds so different. Spanish is so easy, look at the alphabet. Like, yeah, I learned later that wasn't the case, but yeah, that was it. And I was 12. So, I mean, I didn't like have a very sophisticated decision-making process. I just kind of was like, okay, I'll do Spanish. So yeah.
That's cool. And what was that like when you started learning Spanish? Were you, I guess, you know, you only had two options. So was it just kind of like, all right, this is my option? Or were you like, oh my God, I can't wait, I'm so excited? Like, what was your, I guess, temperament around, you know, having to learn Spanish language?
I mean, at first I just thought it was kind of cool. I mean, it wasn't really something I was super interested in. I think the way it was presented was more of like, I don't know. It wasn't really presented in a way like, hey, this is a language you could speak. It was almost like a cultural exploration. Like, hey, learn about this culture. We'll teach you a couple words. You know, it wasn't really like, we want you to become conversational in Spanish. So That's kind of how I took it. The way it was presented is how I received it. And I do remember, though, it's funny now you ask me, because I haven't thought about this in a while. I think my Spanish teacher, I don't know what country she was from, but she had all of us pick Spanish names. So we all just kind of randomly picked a name in Spanish that was began with the same letter as our name. Okay. And I was Tula. That was my Spanish name. Aww. In like seventh grade. It was so weird. I've never heard anyone with that name now. I don't know where she got that from. I've never met anyone with that name. But yeah, I know we all had to pick Spanish names, and that's how she referred to us. And so, you know, she was a native speaker. So I think I was fortunate in that regard that I actually did have a native Spanish speaker as a teacher, even though at the time I did not feel fortunate because it was harder to understand her. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was really my first exposure, and I didn't really, you know, take it too seriously. It was more of just sort of like a little interest. And I remember being pretty decent at it, but, you know, I think a lot of people have these stories of trauma, of like, you know, learning language with these mean teachers. I know I listened to the episode you had with Desta, and she said she had this like evil French teacher. I didn't have that kind of thing, but I just, it was just sort of like a curiosity, but it wasn't anything that I, you know, sort of gravitated to as something special. It was just sort of like, oh, okay, this is another cool thing to learn in school.
Kind of. Yeah. Thing. Yeah. I think a lot of us, and several people that I've spoken to on this show kind of echo the same sentiment that their language study when they were in middle school was just another subject, or high school, it was just another subject. And I think that is really unfortunate. That's, you know, because I kind of felt that way too for most of my middle school, high school, like it's just another subject I have to pass. If I fail, I can't go home and I'll be in big trouble if I fail this class. And it makes me think about like my classmates around that time, because I took Spanish in middle school, and I think one of my teachers was a native Spanish speaker, and I also struggled to understand him, but we didn't really, and I'd be curious to know what you learned, because when I was in middle school, we didn't learn really anything comprehensive. We learned like numbers, colors,
learned days, the months, right? Because they told you every day you would go, hoy es miércoles, yeah. Right? Like, yeah.
No, I was. ¿Cuál es la fecha de hoy?
Es todo. Yeah, like you can start a conversation like that. Like, what is the date? Like, that never happens. It was the same for me. It was just like, you know, that's why I feel like it was more of like a cultural exploration class. Like, you know how you learn like art, but you like survey like, you know, generic things about art. Like, I feel like that's how language has been treated traditionally in American education, which is why people don't really make the connection that this is a thing that I could speak in the real world, right? Because that's not how they teach it.
Right.
So yeah, no, I was just like you. It was like, I learned maybe like, hola señora, ¿cómo está usted? Like robots. And then it was like, oh yeah, this is the day. Maybe, you know, here's how to say a vegetable or fruit, but it wasn't anything very practical at all. So yeah, I had the same experience.
When was it, or maybe what was it that took you from the middle school Spanish of like, you know, this is an exploration, this is cool, I'm doing it, to I want to integrate Spanish into my life?
That's interesting question, because there's actually, I don't know if there's one answer to it, but if I had to come up with like one defining moment, it actually was in the gym, which is going to probably sound weird. But I know at one point I was going to the gym. I hadn't ever gone to the gym in my life. And I had a friend who was trying to lose weight. And she goes, you know, she wanted a gym buddy. I said, sure, I'll go with you. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about working out, but like, sure, I'll give it a try. So I would go and like get on the machines and like try to lift a weight. I had no idea what I was doing. And then one day I saw like this dark room in the back, and it was like the group exercise room. And I was like, okay, well, what's going on over there? It looks like fun. There's like 40 women lined up, like waiting to go in. And I hear this music coming out, and I'm like, what is that? Like, everyone's like really pumped about this class. And I go in, like kind of go towards the back. I'm like, okay, what's going on here? And his little tiny short, like 4'8", like instructor gets up on the stage in front. She's like so energetic. And she's like, come on. And like, I found out later, this was like Zumba, right? This like thing that had become this phenomenon, right? Like, and I was like in it. I was like, oh man. So I got hooked. Like I was going to Zumba every week. Like I'd be at the gym. I was one of the people in line. And I started listening to this music, and I wanted to know like, what is this about? And then I got like this beginner's confidence of thinking like I know how to dance now, right? which was not true.
Zumba will do that to people.
Yeah, like it gives you this false sense of confidence. I mean, because it was like they dimmed the light, so like you couldn't really, you know, see how bad you were in the mirror. Mm-hmm. But like, I said, you know what? I'm doing Zumba. I know this music. I'm going to go take salsa classes. I'm going to go dance. Right.
Cool.
And that's when I found out I didn't know how to dance salsa, especially not with a partner. Mm. But the advantage that Zumba gave me was I knew the rhythms. I started to become familiar with the music. And so slowly I developed this sort of interest in the language because I was singing these songs and I didn't know what they meant. And I said, you know, I know some Spanish. I should know this. And I didn't get it. I didn't understand anything. Mm-hmm. So that combined with the fact that I started to travel, like the first time I left the country, I went to Panama and I didn't understand what was going on there. And I was like, man, this is not okay. Like I spent all this time in school, you know, and, you know, supposedly I learned Spanish, but I don't understand anything that anyone's saying. I like this music. Like I want to learn what's going on. What do I do? Mm-hmm. So I think just kind of through that process of deciding to recommit myself to learning the language for real, right? Learning it conversationally. And then traveling and dancing, it just sort of all came together and it became a part of my life. So for me, I think it was more of like what I would call more of a cultural immersion mm-hmm. because it's not like Spanish was this thing I was trying to learn that was a part from my life. It became a part of who I am. It's like, these are the songs that I sing when I'm having a bad day or when I'm celebrating or when I'm about to go out for the weekend. Like I want to hear bachata. I want to hear reggaeton. I want to hear salsa. So like, this was just who I was. It wasn't something I was trying to do mm-hmm. and trying to learn. So it just, for me, it was natural. It sort of just became a part of my life through the music and through the dancing and travel.
Right. Had you not heard those styles of music before, or were you just in that moment where you heard them and they inspired you for the first time?
Never. So where I'm from, I think, and this may be true for a lot of places in the U.S., probably not so much now, but definitely when I was growing up, I grew up in a very segregated area, not segregated like Jim Crow, but just that people self-selected into their own groups. Mm-hmm. So even in school, like at lunchtime, you go in the cafeteria and it was like the smart kids would be over here, the black kids would be over here, the white kids would be like, it was just, there was this segregation. So I didn't have that exposure to any other culture really, mm-hmm. Except for maybe there was a Jewish community in my middle school. But they kind of, you know, was like, here's the Jewish table. Like we were so separate that I just really didn't have exposure to other types of music, other types of cultures. Like growing up, all I knew was hip hop. Like I was a hip hop head. I was like, that's all I wanted to hear. Like I didn't want to hear nothing about anything else. I started listening to maybe like jazz and stuff like that. But like, so culturally, musically, language, like I just wasn't exposed to anything outside of my little bubble in my world of like, not just being, you know, American, but also being Black in America, which is like a whole subculture. That's mm-hmm. all I knew. So yeah. No, I had never heard any of this other music because I would have been like, what is that? Like, wait, this was like a crossover song or whatever, which happened very rarely. But no, I wasn't exposed to any of it before that.
Wow. When you did find this music that inspired you and inspired your, I would say, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like it was like a major turning point for you.
Yeah. I mean, and so anyone that dances salsa can tell you that when you start dancing, you become an addict and you become part of a community simultaneously, right? Mm-hmm. There is no casual salsa dancer that I've met. Usually those people are people who went through that phase where they were dancing a lot and then they, you know, sort of got a life after and started maybe, you know, doing other things. And now they only dance occasionally, but I have not met anyone who just was like, oh, I just kind of dabble in salsa. Like it consumes you. Mm-hmm. So I kind of became a part of this community. It was what I did every weekend. It was the music I listened to during the week. Like I was going out 3 and 4 nights a week to dance. Like it wasn't a casual hobby.
That's so exciting.
Oh yeah, it's all encompassing. So yeah, I mean, for me, that was a real I think turning point in a lot of ways, just because it just became the thing I did. It wasn't mm-hmm. like, what are you going to do this weekend? It was like, which place are you going to go dance this weekend? Like it just kind of became sort of my social outlet and also like my only exercise that I used to get pre-COVID. I was just dancing. So it covered all those things for me. So I think they say something becomes addictive when it meets like 3 or more needs that you have. Like, so the need for variety, the need for also predictability, the need for stimulation, the need for socialization, like all those things are kind of built into the community and the music. So yeah, it was definitely an addictive part of my life, but a healthy addiction, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I know those salsa socials. It's a tough sentence to say. I know that the salsa socials, they are very lively and they're a lot of fun. I mean, it's like, I don't know how it was by you, but here in New York City, you could go to a social on like a Friday night, maybe like 6, 7 p.m. or later. And it's like going to a club. It's like,
oh yeah.
It's better than going to a club, because you're actually learning something and you're meeting people with the same interest. You're not like, you know, hopefully encountering anything sleazy or, you know, unwanted, but that's really a lot of fun. So what were some of the methods that you were able to use in this time, since, you know, you went to Panama? How were you able to learn the language?
Well, for me, like I said, it was a lot with the music. I would listen to songs. I would get curious. I'd be singing and I'd go, okay, what was that word? Or I didn't hear any, I didn't understand any of that. Like, what's going on? And I would look up the lyrics. I would often find a lot of the lyrics were incorrect. A lot of the translations of lyrics were even worse. Like, we wanted to go there. So I had to develop really my own process for this. So what I would do is I would find, you know, tutors online that were from these countries. I spent a lot of time talking to folks in Dominican Republic before I had ever visited there, you know, talking to them online, like, hey, like, there's this bachata, me encanta, like, I love this song. What the heck is he talking about? Because I'm looking in the dictionary, Google Translate was garbage. Like, I don't understand, what is a cacique? Like, there's this guy who always says el cacique, and I'm like, what is he talking about? And I find out, like, these songs aren't in the dictionary because they're very specific to Spanish from the Caribbean. Cacique means chief. It comes from the indigenous language there, not Spanish. So anyway, like, I had to go through this whole process of like digging into these lyrics, and through that, it was like a real window into the culture. So I was learning about Dominican Republic. I was learning about Puerto Rico. I was learning about Cuba, like through the songs. And that was really what opened the door for me to have these conversations with people from these different countries and find out more about them and the culture and really dive into it through using the music. So I would be singing along with the songs, even though, like, I cannot sing. So do not, do not ask me to, it'll be a disaster for everyone. And they will turn off your podcast. But yeah, like, if I'm in the shower, like, I'd be singing, you know, Vivir Mi Vida, like, just whatever I was listening to. And I think just through that process, naturally, without me noticing, my accent actually improved quite a bit. Like, people even now tell me I have a Caribbean accent, which I don't get, because like, I'm just like, I'm just trying to like speak. I'm not like trying to do a thing. But I think it's because like I learned through listening to the music and singing along, and, you know, me being in the shower singing bachata and salsa, like, it's just what I did. Mm-hmm. So that to me was what I think what kept me going through when normally language gets like boring or tedious, or you feel like you're failing, because like, you know, I did have times like where I would travel and I would not understand someone and I would feel discouraged. But then like I go out dancing that night and I'm listening to a song that I know the words to, and I'm like, I'm having fun. So it kind of helped me get through those times where normally I would associate a negative experience with the language to having something positive to then be able to rebound to, I think was huge, and just keeping me in it for longer. Cause otherwise I think I would have given up, you know, because I'm, you know, recovering perfectionist. So like, I don't want to screw up. Like, I don't want to sound like a gringa. Like, I want to sound like I know what I'm talking about. Right. So like, yeah, I would have probably given up if it wasn't for the music.
Yeah. That's so cool, I think. And I really like that you pointed out how the words you were finding were very specific to one country or to one region. And I feel like I had a moment in my life where I was really into like Latin music, and I had the opposite of you, because I would listen to the music and I loved it, but I got discouraged really easily because I didn't understand anything. It didn't, like, you know, I feel like with you, it seems like it fueled you to like learn more and to go further. And with me, I was like, nope, I'm never going to sound like I speak this language. And I just, you know, I just started to like listen to it to enjoy it for what it was. And I really, do you have any favorite artists, singers that you maybe always go back to, or, you know, maybe some of the first people that you listened to that you really grew to love over time?
Oh gosh, there's so many. Well, I will say, I think maybe one of the differences is as to why you may have got discouraged is one, because it was Caribbean Spanish that you were listening to in Latin music, and no one really teaches it. So it's hard. It's hard when you're trying to learn something and it sounds so different from what's taught in school, and then the words aren't there. Like, it was a challenge. Like, I had to put effort, but because I was so in love with the music, I stuck with it because it was a part of my life. So I think that's what helped me get over that. Cause yeah, you're right. I mean, at first I felt the same way. I was like, what are they talking about? but yeah, so for artists, that's the toughest question you can ask. And it's funny that you're doing this, because like, I think it's me getting a dose of my own medicine, because I always ask this question on my podcast and no one can ever answer it because it's like the hardest question when you love music. But I will say like just some that stick out to me. So like one of the first artists, and this is going to be like very typical, that I really started trying to dissect some of his songs was Marc Anthony, which as a salsera is like, I'm like embarrassed to say, because like, he's not known for making the most danceable music always, with like few exceptions, like Vivir Mi Vida, for example. But anyway, so for any of my salsero friends that might be listening, like, forgive me. But yeah, Marc Anthony, because, you know, he was so popular, but a lot of his songs were very like poetic. So it was really hard to get a grip on like what he was talking about. And then it was like, well, was it even really useful to learn like how to say, you know, eres como un flor, like, I'm not going to go up to someone and say, you're like a flower. But but like, you know, his songs are really popular. I would always kind of be dancing to them. So I did, you know, learn some of his music in the beginning. I think Vivir Mi Vida is the one that sticks out, sort of like his biggest salsa hit, like in the past, like a couple decades. And it really meant a lot, I think, to the genre at that time as well. So Marc Anthony, particularly that song and a couple of others, like Valió La Pena is another. It's a great song to dance to and also has useful vocabulary. In terms of bachata, because I kind of had this evolution where salsa was my first love, and then I found this thing called bachata and I was like, what is that? I like that. it was amazing. So like, I remember, I think I was homesick one weekend and I was like trying to find something to watch, and I found this like live concert. And I never heard of this artist before. And I was like, why, how did he pack Madison Square Garden? I've never heard of this person. Right. Mm. And it was Romeo Santos.
Oh my gosh.
And like, I just like his charisma, like I was just like, whoa, like this guy is commanding this crowd. It's like just him. And so like, then I kind of got into Aventura, like I'd heard some of their songs. So I really, man, there's so many Aventura, Romeo Santos songs. Yeah. Like I was obsessed with Propuesta Indecente for like 2 years. Like I had a friend told me, he's like, you have a PhD in that song. I was like, yeah. Cause like we were dancing to it once. I was funny. Like we were out dancing and somebody came up with like another version of it. And it was a little bootleg and it sounded like they tried to make it like sound more clubby. I don't know how to explain it, but I noticed immediately, I was like, this is not the right version of the song. That's like not where that beat goes. And he looked at me like, what are you talking about? And then like later he was like, oh yeah, I forgot you have a PhD in this. Ralindo Rodriguez is another one. Oh my gosh. Like bachata, but like he has so many hits. I saw him perform live and his voice sounds so good in person. You know how a lot of artists have like auto tune or whatever, like they have studio voices, right? But like he has like a great voice, and seeing him perform Medicina de Amor live was like one of the most memorable things that's happened to me. But yeah, like those are ones that stand out. Of course, Celia Cruz, because love her, right? Like how can you not love Celia?
Adore.
But yeah, those are some of the ones I come back to. Those are the ones that are in heavy rotation when I'm like going into my classic playlist.
Oh man, I love it. And I, it's so funny because I don't like hold this against me, but I forget about bachata all the time. And I don't know how, because I live in New York City. So I hear it like everywhere. And I love it. Like it's just such a distinct rhythm. And it's really like lively, gets people going and everything. And I always forget about bachata, but then when I see people dancing, I remember this. In high school, I had a very good friend who was Dominican, and she was the person who introduced me to bachata. I was like, what is this? Like, what are you talking about? And, you know, she was the one who kind of helped me realize, like, this is a bachata song. This is a bachata song. This is a salsa song. So, like, kind of understanding that, because I didn't really know that either. She taught me how to dance bachata on the bus. On the public bus coming home from school. Like, we were listening to this song, and she taught me just the very basic, you know, 1, 2, 3 step. And
right.
It's still the one that I hold on to. I haven't, my bachata has not gotten any better, but I love it. And it's like, I don't know why I always forget about it, especially because it's so distinct, but I really need to listen to more of that. Well, it's summer's coming, so it'll be around. I'll definitely hear it like all over the place.
Bachata has changed a lot too. Like, it's become this international thing. Like, it used to be this very, very specific genre that was only in Dominican Republic, that was seen as like this low class music. It wasn't really listened to by people in the middle and upper class. Until like you had a Juan Luis Guerra who came out with the song called Bachata Rosa, which is like, it was like a more elegant, more romantic type of bachata. But prior to that, it was like music that people listened to in the bars. Like, they were people complaining about, you know, people they broke up with. So like the traditional bachata sound has a lot of guitar, is very like distinct, but it has changed quite a bit. And yeah, like, so some of the newer bachata sound very different, but bachata is actually known for its bass line. It's like a goom, it's like, so, but people recognize it for the guitar, but it's really the bass line that defines it as bachata, which is something that I found out in musicality. Like, oh yeah, that's actually, I didn't think of that, because everyone focuses so much on like guitarra because it's like so prominent. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but I love bachata. I could talk about bachata forever. Oh, you'll never forget about it if you talk to me enough.
I love also hearing that, and I don't know, you know, I feel like we're gonna get off topic, but it's okay. We can always edit. I also love what's happening with cumbia music, and how cumbia was, well, what my Latin American friends have told me is that this was like country music from like their parents' generation, and it wasn't really like the coolest thing. But now I hear so many songs with a cumbia rhythm, or that have been reworked to include like a cumbia bass line, so to speak. And I think it's really interesting to see, you know, I thought of it when, as you said, that bachata is kind of evolving. It made me think of other, you know, Latin rhythms that are, you know, becoming part of music today. And I think it's interesting. And I guess you cannot not mention like reggaeton, and how, you know, that has become this worldwide phenomenon. And I think it's really interesting.
Yeah. And I think it's also what makes music such a great sort of tool for learning language, because one of the things that people don't realize, I think, is although Spanish has like all these very specific regional varieties and, you know, differences in language and accent, the fact for the Spanish speaking world. So whereas maybe 20 years ago, someone that's from Spain wouldn't really understand like someone from Puerto Rico or Dominican Republic. Now, I mean, like a couple of years ago, I had an exchange student stay with me for the summer. She was from Spain, but she loved American culture. So she came here for a program learning English, and she had heard of Romeo Santos. Like, her and her friends were like listening to bachata in Spain.
Right.
You know, now they didn't know how to dance it. That's a whole other story about Spaniards, but but she was listening to it. So if you like, some of the words they use, the accent, some of the intonation carries with, you know, that culture around the world. So even for the Spanish speaking world, a lot of these different genres of music have made the language that people speak more popular. So even like reggaeton, that means like people are speaking like Puerto Ricans, you know, or at least understanding them in other countries. So it really does give you sort of like a more universal view of the language as well.
Yeah, definitely. At any point since you started listening to the music and, you know, getting more interested in the music and the culture that way, did you take any Spanish classes? Did you have any Spanish tutors or anything to, I guess, give you a baseline of structure in the Spanish language? Or were you just strictly like learning through the music and the vocabulary in that way?
When you say the word structure, like it makes me instantly bored. I think this is because the way my brain works, I have like an ADHD brain. So like for me, structure automatically makes me disinterested. So, but that's not to say that I didn't, study different things at different points. Like one of the things I do a lot when I travel is I would always like just find the language school that's in the place I'm traveling to and like take a class there, you know. Even if I'm just there for like a week, like I might, like when I went to Costa Rica, like I took a class, like, you know, they have conversational classes you can kind of drop in and drop out. So I would do that. And like, inevitably they'd have a focus for, you know, that week, or they would test you and say, okay, this is your level and this is your class. When I went to Panama, I took a class and they were doing El Imperfecto, which is like the past tense in Spanish. So, so when I travel, I try to take advantage of those opportunities to learn as well, which, you know, a lot of people might think is boring, but I love learning. So when I travel, I go to school. Like, I don't know why I do that, but I do. And also because a lot of the language schools also hook you up with like excursions and things. So it's like a lot of fun and meet people. So, but especially when I'm traveling solo, I like to take classes. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I have tried, I think, almost everything. So when I really tried to learn again on my own, I just kind of looked, well, what's out there, right? So at one point I joined the Add One Challenge, like when that was like a thing. I mean, it still is a thing, but like when it was more in its earlier days, I did that, like the 90 days to speaking to a native speaker for 30 minutes or something like that. I did Pimsleur, which I really liked because I would listen to it. I would be on my way to work. I pop the CDs in, so I'm really dating myself. And I would be able to listen and repeat and talk, you know, speak Spanish without a person in front of me, you know, which I think was good in helping me get over, you know, this idea, like I'll sound silly, like when I start talking to someone, right?
Mm-hmm.
I probably still did at first, but like, you know, I had that practice on my own, kind of talking in the car, listening to the program. I downloaded every app, like I've tried almost everything. But the ones that kind of stick out are the ones I actually got through, like, you know, was like Pimsleur or, doing some of those programs when I was traveling. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I also just did a lot of speaking Spanish. Like what I would do when I prepared to travel, like for instance, before I went to Costa Rica, I went on italki and I looked for tutors from Costa Rica so I could talk to them before I got there. You know, one, just to find out like, hey, you know, where can I find the good food? Where should I go hang out? but also to get used to their accent, right? And to hear them speaking, and also to like, to learn a little bit more from someone that's living there, from their perspective about their country, about the culture, was really helpful. So that was kind of one of the little tricks I would do, like that would really help me get ready before I travel.
Mm-hmm.
to get used to an accent. So I kind of just was, it was more free form for me. Like I really followed my interests at the time. And if I would come across something I was struggling with, like, I don't know, maybe the past tense and there was something I was getting hung up on, I would notice that in my conversations or when I would come across it in song lyrics. And I would ask questions like, I don't understand why they're using El Imperfecto and not El Pretérito. Explain this to me. Like, I need to know. Like, so I would deep dive on stuff when I would get frustrated from not understanding it. So I think a lot of my study was driven by my own mistakes and my own frustrations when I couldn't understand something I encountered. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I did it. And I think it worked out pretty decent. So I didn't follow a very formal curriculum in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
But at one point I did take a class at a community college, but it did, I didn't find it very helpful. It was taught by, there was a Korean professor, and everyone in the class was like retired, because at community college you could like take the class for free, like if you're mm-hmm. retired. So I was in there with like a lot of retired people listening to a Spanish Asian accent. So I don't know. That was a class, but I didn't find that super helpful.
that really makes me laugh, because did you ever see the show Community?
No, I haven't.
There is a character called Senior Chang. He's played by Ken Jeong, the comedian. Mm-hmm. And I believe he's Korean. I'm not 100% sure. But he's a Spanish teacher at a community college, and His classes are terrible, but of course it's a sitcom. So not a sitcom, but you know, it's a TV comedy. So it's played for laughs and he's really brilliant in that role. But as soon as you said it, I just thought of this one moment in like the first couple of episodes where he starts calling himself like El Tigre Chino or something like that. And it's just, if you ever get a chance, and even if you like just Google some clips, like it's really, really funny. He's just brilliantly funny.
Oh, okay. Let's check that out.
But I think that is really admirable that you were able to learn Spanish on your own in this way. And I think that I like to ask questions like that because, well, number one, I think a lot of people, you know, particularly like my age, a little older, tend to default to taking a class or taking a series of classes. And I think it really takes someone of a strong will to understand themselves enough to know like that's not going to work for them or that's not the best path to success for what they want. So, you know, I hope that somebody listening to this episode, like, you know, maybe if they're struggling with something or trying to figure something out, will realize that there are so many ways to get to where you want to go and to reaching your goals. And I think that's really cool. I really don't know like how many people could do that. And I think it's really admirable. When you started learning Spanish in this way and you started becoming more familiar with the Caribbean Spanish dialects, what were some things that surprised and intrigued you as you were becoming more familiar with the region?
Wow, so many things. I think the first thing that stands out to me, the first thing I thought of when you asked that question is that, you know, I had this assumption that, well, the Caribbean is this region. It really basically just consists of the islands, right? Like there's Cuba, there's Puerto Rico, there's Dominican Republic. And they have pretty similar ways of speaking Spanish. I was surprised to find out, one, that the Caribbean region actually extends into South America as well. So you've got like Venezuela, Colombia, Panama, Costa Rica. They all have Caribbean coasts. And people don't really think about that because they think about the islands, but there's the Caribbean that kind of extends beyond that. So one, that it was broader than I thought. And two, that even within the Caribbean sort of region of Spanish speakers, there's a lot of variation between the way the language is spoken, not just sort of, you know, if someone lives in El Campo, like in the countryside versus in the city or in the capital, but also just between the islands themselves. And one example, I always kind of tell the story, there's my favorite fruit that I encountered when I was in Puerto Rico, because it was the first time I had it. And I go to this like ice cream shop and I was like, I want to try something different. So I try this flavor called parcha. And I didn't know what it was in English because we don't have that fruit in the north part of the US because it's a, you know, tropical fruit. So I just knew it as parcha. So like I go to Dominican Republic probably a year or so later. And I'm like, okay, I know what to order because like I know this flavor, I know this fruit. So I tried to order a drink and I said, you know, parcha. And I was like at this pool bar and, you know, at some, I don't remember where I was, I guess at a resort or something like that. And the guy looked at me, like I said, your mother is the worst person in the world. Like he turned around like as if I had insulted him. And I was so confused and he looked at me and he was like, Chinola. I was like, what? Now there's a carton, right, with the picture. So I know like the fruit is parcha and he knew what I said because he understood it, but he was so mad. Like, I guess he thought I was Puerto Rican. I don't know. But anyway, like, so I find out the same fruit. Now, Puerto Rico and Dominican Republic are not that far from each other, right? Mm. Like, if you look at the map, like, there's a ferry, like, you can go, like, there's a lot of people going back and forth. So I was surprised that this fruit had a very different name. Moving on from that, I find out later when I went to Costa Rica that they called it maracuja, which is probably the word most people are familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's passion fruit in English. So, I kind of went on this journey. But in doing that, I found out that like it's not just passion fruit. There's so many words and phrases that are very specific. Like in Puerto Rico, also like an orange, which like most people know as naranja in Spanish, they call it china. which you might be thinking, that's Chinese. Like, why are they calling it? And there's like this whole story about like how they're that, you know, at the market, they used to have oranges in these boxes that said China on the side. So people started calling them Chinas. I don't know if that's true, but like, there's all of these things, right? Like that happen within these countries that give the languages so much variation that I was really surprised, because I just kind of assumed they're so close. How could it be so different? But there really are a lot of differences even within the different countries that speak Spanish that are in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm. So as you move through this region in your travels, and you know, you do speak Spanish, how do you feel like you have to, do you feel like you have to adapt with certain words or certain mannerisms, or maybe the cadence of the way that you speak Spanish to people? Is that something that you're always monitoring? Is it something that you're always conscious of and aware of? Do you try to maybe speak differently in the Dominican Republic than you would in Panama or in Colombia?
Not really. I mean, I don't put that much thought into it, because I mean, when you're traveling, you've already got like a whole set of stressors, and then you're just sort of in a different environment. There's like so much going on. If I was to put effort into monitoring my speech in that way, wow, I'd have to have a lot of mental capacity and focus and concentration that I lack. So no, I don't really try. I mean, in cases like the one I mentioned where I know that this is called one thing in this country, yeah, I have to say what they would understand. Or if there's a particular phrase that I know, right? Like if I'm in DR, I might say que lo que. I'm not going to say that in Puerto Rico, because they'd be like, okay, what is this crazy Dominican girl doing here? Like, so like there are things I'm aware of in terms of word choice, but in terms of how I speak the language, my accent and intonation, like I don't vary it. And it's funny, because the first time I recognized it as a potential issue was when I went to Costa Rica. So I spent a lot of time learning Spanish through music from Puerto Rico, from Cuba, from República Dominicana. I go to Costa Rica, which is in Central America. I was not on the Caribbean coast. Mm-hmm. I was on the Pacific side. And I went, like I mentioned, you know, I take classes when I travel. So I was taking a class there. And my professor was so sweet. She was like, Tamara, hay que pronunciar la letra S. So she was like, you have to pronounce the letter S. Like, why are you not pronouncing the S on the end of your words? Por Dios. And I was like, huh? So like, it was a habit that I developed. And a lot of people that I talk to, especially when I talk to someone who's like from Colombia or somewhere like Central America, they tell me I have like a Dominican accent. Nobody from Dominican Republic says that to me. They say I have an American accent. But in general, people tell me I have like a Caribbean accent. So it's hilarious. The funniest thing I've been told is when I was in Colombia, in Cartagena, this guy asked me where I was from, and he was looking, I was like, Estados Unidos. He's like, okay, pero ¿de dónde es tu familia? I was like, where's your family from? Mm-hmm. I was like, Estados Unidos. He's like, boy, hold up. He's like, but your accent is a mix of Cuban, Puerto Rican, and Dominican. And I was like, how did I manage that? Like, clearly I'm on brand, right? Because I have courses for all three languages. But it was hilarious that that was his observation of me. And he was in Cartagena, which is the Caribbean side of Colombia, mm-hmm. right? So I've been told that I have a Caribbean accent. I don't intentionally try to do it. It's just some, I don't know, you call it good or bad habits, but they're just habits that I have. So when I was in Costa Rica and she mentioned that to me, I try to like pronounce the S, but it doesn't always happen, because like if I'm speaking quickly, like you're not going to hear the S's, they're going to drop off. So, you know, blame salsa music for the way I speak, but like that's the most thought I give to it. But I have noticed from what other people say to me, you know, that if someone that was talking to me was not a native speaker, they might have trouble understanding me, because I have like sort of this Caribbean like flair to my accent. Mm-hmm. So.
Tell us about Spanish con Salsa. What led you to starting your business and building your courses and your community? Tell us about your students and what that process of helping them to learn Spanish looks like.
Well, for me with Spanish con Salsa, it was really obviously like a natural progression of sharing the way that I learned. You know, that's how it kind of started. It was like, well, I have collected all of this amazing information that is not available anywhere about the music, about the different regional varieties of Spanish. And I wanted to find a way to share that and formalize it more. So I tried many different things. I'm an experimenter. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I really have enjoyed about Spanish con salsa is 2 years ago when I started my podcast, which is Learn Spanish con Salsa, because I just love podcasting. And that was something else I didn't mention earlier when you asked me about how I learned. I did spend quite a bit of time listening to podcasts, and there weren't that many at the time, but it was something that I loved, because just being able to listen to conversation, I think, is really important when you get to like the intermediate level and you're trying to learn. You have to hear the way people talk in conversation, like we're doing right now, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's different than like a song or other ways of learning or like a course. So I really did love podcasts. So when I started my podcast, it's one of the things that has really helped me, I feel, connect with people. And you know, at the root of thing, I don't consider myself a teacher. I'm a language coach. I actually got certification in language coaching. Cool. Because my goal is really to help people learn how to learn, or to set goals and to make progress without feeling like I've got to just like get this grammar book and get all this stuff perfect and drill myself or whatever. Like just to give some of the things we've been talking about, like the context of language, adding in the culture, adding in travel, adding in experiences, talking to people, finding things that will make the language interesting for you. So a lot of what I do is more getting people to break out of that traditional education model of going to take a class and learn how to develop a way of learning that works for them. Mm-hmm. And also encouraging people, because it can be so hard when you're learning any language, right? Like you get discouraged, you've got these peaks and valleys, you've got times where you feel like you got it, and then you have an experience and you go, okay, I don't got it, right? Like it's such an emotional roller coaster, I think, at least it was for me. It still is for like Arabic, oh man, don't get me started. So I think that it's important to have support, you know? And one of the things that I think really has helped me as well is just, you know, connecting with the community, which is really hard to do, right? I mean, it's not easy at all to build a community, but I've kind of stuck with it because I think it's so important. So that's what I emphasize in terms of Spanish con salsa, in terms of our membership community. But I also have the course, which is creatively named Learn Spanish with Music, that kind of goes through how I learn Spanish with music and give some more resources and tools, and also focusing a lot on listening comprehension, which is something you mentioned, Elle, that you struggled with listening to songs. I really kind of break down, like, this is how you use music to learn. Like, we're not just Googling lyrics, you know, and like watching poorly put together YouTube videos. Don't get me started on those YouTube lyrics videos. Like we're actually being intentional about it and finding out how to really get to the point where that song that you didn't understand at the beginning of the week, by the time you go through one of the lessons in my course, you're singing along and you know exactly what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the process that I take people through. Cause I think when you feel like you can't understand, it's such a huge barrier to fluency, because you think about it. If you think, right, that you're not going to understand someone when they start talking to you, what are the chances you're going to start a conversation with them? Mm-hmm. Right? Like zero, like, cause you don't want to be embarrassed. As adults, we have this, we think we're smart. We know we're supposed to have it together. We're supposed to know what's going on.
Right, right.
It's very uncomfortable to be put in situations where we have no clue what's going on and to still retain some type of self esteem. Right. So that's one of the huge, huge barriers. But I think until you have that confidence that you can improvise in conversation, that you understand what someone is saying, that you can at least have some tools to figure it out when you don't understand everything, that is really, really an impediment to becoming fluent. So I focus a lot on that as well. Mm-hmm. In the course. So yeah, that's how it developed. It was just helping people with the way I learned, applying what I learned in my language coaching course and applying it more to a group coaching model within our membership community. And yeah, doing the podcast is one of my favorite things to do now, because I get to talk to so many interesting people. It's kind of in English, it's in Spanish. I'm talking about music. I'm talking about travel. It's just like, it's my favorite thing. So,
yeah, I really enjoy your podcast. You have such interesting guests on your show. And I really do love that, you know, your focus is on the Caribbean Spanish. Cause like you said earlier, it's not something that, you know, people really teach you these specific words or about the culture. And I have a thing where, like, just personally, I feel like I like to see anybody going into the Caribbean region and actually showing the culture and showing the history and talking about those things, because I think it's so easy, especially for Americans, to just look at the Caribbean like as a playground and a place where you go and you relax and you take time for yourself. And I think that very often people who are on holiday, they forget that, okay, there are people here with lives, they're raising their families, they're taking care of their loved ones, and they're getting on with their life. So they're, you know, their home is somebody else's vacation. And I think it's really too easy for people to see things like that. So I'm always happy to see someone who's putting a positive light on the Caribbean region for the right reasons, and, you know, serving to educate people on what things are really like there.
Yeah. You know, I think that is so interesting because, yes, people do tend to look at the Caribbean as like, it's just beaches, right? And we go there for vacation. And I have to be honest, like when I started like traveling to the English speaking Caribbean, that was definitely the way I looked at it too. So before I really learned Spanish, like I mentioned, I had been to Virgin Islands. I had a roommate in college, actually was from Virgin Islands. And that was kind of my first like introduction really at a more personal level to Caribbean culture, instead of, you know, like we were used to like, okay, I'll go get a beef patty from the Jamaican spot, or like, you knew some people who were from Trinidad. Like but my roommate in college was from Virgin Islands and her boyfriend was from Trinidad and he was a chef. So when I tell you, I got the best roti like in the world, like when he would come over, I would say, everyone clear out of the kitchen. Dexter's making roti, like nobody go in the kitchen. Like, I don't care what you're doing here. Like not having breakfast today. We need to get the roti, like, right. So I kind of had that exposure, but like, I started to really begin to appreciate, I think, more of, you know, people and culture and looking at it beyond, like you said, just like a place to go to a beach, like, you know, cause that's my initial thought. Cause that's what people say about the Caribbean, like, oh, go to the beaches, but there's so much going on. There's so much rich culture. There's so much going with the people. And when I travel, I don't like to be one of those people that just goes from the airport to the resort and ignores everything in between.
Me too.
So it's really important to me to highlight that, because I think you're right. I think it's overlooked, and especially in the world of language learning, because I can't tell you how frustrating it is to, you know, try to explain like things like we were talking about earlier, like, okay, you know, this is the word for this in Puerto Rico, this is the word in Dominican Republic. And I do think it's important when you travel to not just be that person that goes for the leisure and actually does, you know, try to do something, to give back, or at least to be aware of where you are. One of the things I did when I went to Panama is the school that I attended, they actually had a program you could volunteer. So I volunteered for a day, sort of like helping take care of these animals that they were sort of recuperating, who got injured in the wild. They were going to get them together so they could return to the wild. So like, I remember like we made like treats and stuff for like some of the animals there. Aww. So I think it makes it such a much richer experience when you are more engaged in community in that way, I think, versus just traveling. I mean, yes, we all need vacations. I think for me, it's definitely one of the things that's enriched my experiences when I travel, knowing a little bit more about the culture, about the people, about the history, because otherwise you are just kind of skimming the surface of something that's much richer,
right?
That you really miss out on.
Right. I think of something else that you said about a word. I don't remember what the word was that you said, but it's used in Puerto Rico, I think you said, but it's actually not of Spanish origin. And I think, I haven't been to Latin Caribbean yet. I will get there. I haven't been there yet. But I think that's an interesting thing to note as far as like a historical thing that I think it's easy to get on a plane and say, I'm going to the Dominican Republic and they speak Spanish there, but, you know, also taking into account the Spanish language and the words in the language that have come from African origin or, native, native origin, indigenous origin. Thank you. And take that into account as well, and how those factors have influenced the language and the culture. So yeah.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the things also that surprised me as I've been learning about the different variations of Spanish. And even like Mexico, which is, you know, not something I'm as familiar with, like Mexican Spanish. It's not really my thing, so to speak. But, you know, I have learned that there are so many indigenous languages in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Like there are, I think, dozens of languages. And the reason why Mexican Spanish is so different is because of that influence of, you know, you have Mayan culture, you have all these other sort of cultures and indigenous languages that have mixed in with it, as well as English, because of course the influence in the US, you have that in Puerto Rico too. I mean, like, it's just astounding. But I think that when you know something about the culture, it starts to make sense, right?
Yeah.
Like, just like here in the US, like where we have an indigenous population that, you know, if you hear most people tell a story, oh, they all died, right? Like the smallpox took them all up. But mm-hmm. there's still a population of indigenous people in the United States, and they still exist. There may not be as many of them as there could have been if history wasn't what it was, but there's still communities that are thriving. And in Puerto Rico, for example, the indigenous culture there is Taino. So there's lots of people in Puerto Rico who are trying to reconnect with their indigenous language and culture, some of the dances as well. When I was, you know, during this whole COVID thing, I was taking a lot of like online classes, and I actually took an online dance class that was taught by someone who was from Puerto Rico, and she was Taino, and she very much was keeping, or is keeping, her indigenous culture alive, from the music to the way she dresses. I mean, so that exists still in mm-hmm. a lot of the places in the Caribbean. And Dominican Republic, for example, the name of Dominican Republic is said to be, and I don't, again, you know, I'm going by the oral history, sort of, I've been told, is Quisqueya. So if you see like a Dominican restaurant called Quisqueya, or if you see a Puerto Rican restaurant it's called Borinquen, where did those words come from? Those aren't mm-hmm. Spanish words. Those are the words the indigenous people called Borinquen. And that's why you hear Puerto Ricans say Boricua. That's from the indigenous culture, from Taino culture. It's not from Spanish. So it's not something that you really understand mm-hmm. unless you know something about the culture and the people, with the language, and when you're traveling, when you don't have that perspective, or when you just ignore those things and assume they're not important.
Right.
To me, they're vitally important to the identity. When you talk to people, that it's important to them. So I think that if you want to have a respectful and intelligent conversation, you should make it your business to know about it too.
Absolutely. I could do a whole other episode on that alone, because but before I get carried away and talking your ear off about the Caribbean, please tell us where we can find you, where we can take one of your courses, and where we can listen to your podcast.
Wow. So my website is Spanish Con Salsa. That is where you'll find all things Spanish Con Salsa. So if you want to take either a one-on-one lesson, I have a team of coaches that are from various places in the Caribbean and some in other parts of Latin America. So you can take a one-on-one lesson. If you want to sign up for a course, it's more of a self-study course. You'll also find that on our website, SpanishConSalsa.com. If you want to listen to the podcast, just search in whatever app you're listening to this wonderful podcast right now and search for Learn Spanish Con Salsa, and you will find my podcast. And the website, learnspanishconsalsa.com, also has all of our show notes, playlists of the songs I feature on the podcast, and lots of other goodies and things to do to practice your Spanish listening skills. So so find me in all those places.
Amazing. I will add those links into the show notes for anyone listening. They can just scroll and click and, you know, get to your platform right away, and hopefully get in touch so that they can start learning Caribbean Spanish as well.
Yes. And with music, it's the most fun way to learn Spanish. So definitely check it out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tamara, thank you so much for having this conversation with me. And I feel like we talked more about culture than language, but I'm always but fine important. With that. Yeah. Yeah.
Language is part of culture. I think that's key, right? I think what we talked about, you know, in our conversation just emphasizes the fact that you can't just get a grammar book and figure it out, right? Like, language is a subset of culture. It's part of this larger thing. And I think when, as language learners, we ignore that we really don't understand language as well as we think we do. So I think it's an important conversation to have. And thank you so much, Elle, for having me. I'm a big fan of your podcast too. So thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you. I like to end each episode with the same question. And just to end on a fun note, a little bit of a light thing here, but do you have any jokes, swear words, tongue twisters, cool slang words, idioms, words of wisdom, or words of advice in Spanish to share?
Wow, that's like such a vast array of options. But when you said slang, like the thing that comes to my mind, like probably one of my favorite words, I would say Dominican Spanish, but I think it's also used in like Venezuela, probably a few other places. But vaina, it's got to be the most versatile word in Caribbean Spanish, because it can literally mean anything. So if you want to say, like, you want to refer to something, but you don't know what it's called, you could sound really cool and also not have any clue what you're talking about if you just substitute the word vaina. Dame esa vaina. Que esa vaina. Que esa vaina por allí. Like, you could just say, like, vaina, and it means, like, anything, right? Like, literally, I guess you could translate it in standard Spanish to cosa, which is literally thing. Mm-hmm. But like, man, but you could use it to describe a situation. Que vaina está pasando por aquí? Like, what's going on over here? Like, you could just vaina is like great. Like, and it's funny because, like, anytime I hear it, like, I just assume the person's from DR. But like, you, like I said, other countries also use it. But I think maybe DR is more well known for it, but it's so versatile. I guess you could consider it slang. I wouldn't walk into like a business meeting and say que vaina esta pasando, but but yeah, like, it's, I love that word. Like, and there's like a whole video too, is this YouTube video of like all of the ways you can use vaina, and this guy is actually, he has a chart, it's a comedy, but he has this like chart, he's trying to explain to like a group of his friends, like, what part of speech is it? Okay, vaina es un sustantivo, like, it's a noun, it's a verb, it's an adverb, like, it's hilarious. So yeah, I think that's one of the most versatile ones that I like is vaina.
Vaina. I like that. I always love a good catch-all word. I think that they're really useful for people who are just learning, because, you know, I think when we're first learning a language, we do get nervous of sounding like we stick out like a sore thumb or sounding a little bit too formal. So these little words, I think that, you know, once you gain a little bit of confidence, you can start slipping them into conversation here and there and test it out. And I think those are like confidence super boosters.
Oh yeah, definitely. Knowing those like little filler words, those little things that like, it's great when you know those words, when people look at you like, how did you know that? Like,
right.
How do you know about that? Like, I love that.
That's amazing. Thank you so much again for this conversation. I learned so much from you, and I'm so happy that you had the time to chat. Before I let you go, don't think too hard about this, but in this situation, when we've been talking for some time, in Spanish, what would be the best way to say goodbye?
There's so many ways. We've been talking for some time. I mean, the simplest way is to just say adios. Nos vemos. Like, we'll see each other soon.
Nos vemos, Tamara. And I will be talking to you soon.
Nos vemos. Ciao.
Bye.